Welcome to episode 25. I can't tell you how many times my perinatal clients say to me, I don't even know what information to listen to anymore. I think sometimes we expect to be told absolutely everything by our family doctor, but find ourselves turning to Google or social media for answers we don't even know we can trust. My guest today is Dr. Alicia Power, a family physician in Victoria, British Columbia, who specializes in the care of pregnant and postpartum women. In 2020, she and colleague Dr. Sarah Lee started a deep dive into examining the gaps in care between common practice and what their patients were looking for. Their online health platform, She Found Motherhood, was launched out of need to create an accessible online community rich with evidence-based, trustworthy information. You'll hear in this episode how they realize ways our healthcare system could improve and how much more effective care is when allied healthcare professionals come together to treat patients holistically. You'll hear where to find all the evidence-based information Dr. Sarah and Alicia have worked so hard to create, and tips for how to advocate for yourself when you discuss your goals with your care provider. I hope you leave the episode with the feeling of hope, just like I did. I'm not sure if you'll hear it in my voice, but at the end, I even start to choke up at the feeling that there just might be some change one day. Let's get to the discussion. Welcome to the Pelvic Floor Project. I'm your host, Melissa DeSalles, a physical therapist in Kelowna, BC, Canada, and founder of Mommy Berries, an online platform to support pregnant and postpartum women. I'm here because too many women fear their body during pregnancy and then feel let down by their body after baby, and I want to help change this. My goal with this podcast is to take my personal experience as a mom of two, my knowledge as a PT, and everything I've learned from my clients, and then sit down with other professionals, not only to provide you with evidence-based information, but maybe, just maybe, spark some changes by bringing our professions together. I'm confident we can make some headway if we come together to look at women holistically. I'm curious to see what changes this project will make in my community, and I look forward to have you join me on this journey. A reminder that content in this podcast is intended as general information only and should not be considered medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Now, sit back and relax while you listen. I know this will be difficult for you because you have 3,450 things to do, but I challenge you to put yourself first during this episode. All right. I am so happy to have you here, Alicia. And I think what would be really helpful is if you start by talking a little bit about what is She Found Motherhood. Just start from the very beginning. Where did this all come to be?
Awesome. I'd love to. And thank you so much for having me. I love, we've done a few podcasts together and a couple collaborations, and it's always a pleasure to work with you and learn from you. So thank you. So my name is Alicia Power. I'm a family doctor and I do full service family practice, but I have a special interest in care of pregnant and postpartum and newborn people. And my colleague, Dr. Sarah Lee, and I both work out of a clinic called Grow Health in Victoria, BC, providing that type of care. She also has a special training in addiction medicine as well. So about a year and a half, right before the pandemic hit, we started talking about creating an online platform for pregnant and newly parenting people to help support them with good, high quality, reliable information. And then the pandemic hit. So we really got our butts in gear, so to speak, to make this happen because our patients were really struggling. They didn't know where to go for advice. They didn't know where to get good quality information. The stuff that they were finding on the World Wide Web and social media, there's a lot of good stuff out there, but there's a lot of bad stuff out there. And being in isolation and not having their normal supports around them really, really brought that to the forefront. So that's kind of how we got going. She Found Health was our original name. And then we moved to She Found Motherhood. So we started a website. We have an Instagram at she.found.motherhood. And we have a podcast, She Found Motherhood Podcast.
I think I'm trying to remember how I found you guys. And I think that someone told me about your page. And I remember looking, thinking, oh, this is interesting. You don't see many physicians in this space. And that's why I actually reached out to you guys really early on, because you were saying something about, I think it must have been pelvic health. And I thought, this is great that they're helping to spread awareness, because I do know that a lot of your clients come to you. They trust your advice and they trust your knowledge. So I think it's great because you're meeting your patients where they're at. And this is the reality of our life right now, right? People are going to social media and Google to try to figure out a lot of this information. And you're right. I think it's hard as an evidence-based provider to give them that in an interesting way, isn't it? So I think that you guys are doing such a great job. I didn't mean to cut you off, because I want to hear a little bit more about you and Sarah.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And so what I was going to say is, this journey that we've been on, because we're trying to put out evidence-based information. So we're actually like going back almost to med school. And let me tell you, we learn very little about this whole journey in med school, let alone the entire benefits of our allied health colleagues and that interdisciplinary care model, which is kind of, well, we'll get to it. But one of the best things that has come out of this for myself, and I know for Sarah as well, doing this work. So we have gone back to the basics on like all kinds of things. I, for years and years and years, told postpartum people they could not have a bath until 6 weeks postpartum, because that is what my preceptor in residency told me. I never looked at the data. I just trusted what she said. But there's no data for that. I have been robbing people of that joy for like 10 years. And so this has been such an amazing education for us, just going back to the basics and really looking at the data and really kind of making things easily accessible and accessible for people. The other thing that has been amazing is connections with people like yourself. We have made some amazing connections with physiotherapists, social workers, counselors, dietitians, and the list goes on. And in med school and in our training, we get no training in interdisciplinary care. And our system is set up in a way that does not really support that. It doesn't support it for us as care providers, but it also doesn't support it for our patients, because a lot of the allied health you have to pay out of pocket for or pay through your insurance. And some people can't afford it. And so it has been absolutely amazing learning about the opportunities for people in an interdisciplinary model with allied health, you know, care team, to really improve outcomes, which is something that we knew-ish about before, but has really hit home during this work that Sarah and I have been doing over the last year and a half.
That's great. I mean, I think that I want to touch on really quickly, if I picture the average person that comes to see me, let's say during pregnancy or maybe postpartum, I'll often ask, you know, why are you here? And what comes out of a lot of their mouths is, I thought I'd get this from my doctor or my midwife, and they kind of feel a bit cheated, let's say, that they didn't get that information. But for some reason, I think that, again, like you said, the healthcare system is set up such that everything has to go through that family doctor or that point of contact. And I think that there's nothing wrong with that, but I think sometimes it puts a lot of the onus on you to know everything. And can any one provider know everything? I think it's sometimes like your specialty is knowing, you know, how to triage to some extent, right, to the right care provider. And if you look at, let's say, so people come to see a physio for a musculoskeletal problem, and you know, if someone came to you with, say, a shoulder problem, you would kind of say, you know what, I want you to go see the physiotherapist. This isn't really my wheelhouse. I don't do rehab. I know that you should go see a physiotherapist, and I kind of trust that the physiotherapist will send you on to the next level if they need, or they'll send you back to me to refer to a specialist, like some sort of orthopedic specialist in our community. But for some reason, all of that falls on you during pregnancy and postpartum. I think that there's this belief that my doctor should have told me about all of this, and they should have told me what to do. But again, that's not what you learn in your medical training. You don't learn about rehab, and you know, a lot of what happens and a lot of the symptoms that women experience during pregnancy and postpartum have to do with muscles, right? And exercise. And that's generally our forte. And so I think that, again, I think it's important. I wanted to get out of this podcast that if you really stop and think, like, is the onus all on your family doctor to be able to provide you with all this information? So
yeah. I think there's a few pieces to that puzzle. So oftentimes our healthcare system focuses on reactionary care, right? Mm-hmm. So somebody's had her baby and then 6 months later, still can't pee, still can't jump on a trampoline without peeing. Well, I'm going to send them off to pelvic physio at that point, because that's what I've been trained to do. We're not preventative care. Unfortunately, we should be, but we're not. Our system does not support preventative care. So that is a big thing that I've learned through this process is the role that, so let's use pelvic physio, the role that pelvic physio has during the pregnancy to help make the pregnancy easier, the birth easier, and the postpartum recovery more effective, right? You did a podcast with Sarah on our She Found Motherhood podcast, episode number 60, I think it was postpartum pelvic floor recovery. And at that point, you talked exactly about delivery being a musculoskeletal injury, and we need to treat it as such. And that was mind-blowing for me. And I think the benefit of working with our allied health colleagues is they bring a different perspective. And so the more we're able to do that, the more we as providers learn, and the more we can kind of help navigate our patients through this field of craziness that is our healthcare system. But unless we're exposed to that, we don't know what we don't know. And that is the challenge that kind of Sarah and I are trying to overcome, both with patients and with, healthcare providers, is we need to understand what we don't know and then seek out ways of getting that information or accessing that information.
I'm curious to know, it makes me think of, this was before the pandemic, and it was like a special interest group with local UBCO medical students. I want to say first or second year, and there was a women's health initiative. So it wasn't mandatory, but they asked me to come talk to them. I think it was 3 years in a row, and each year there was more people there. And a lot of them were male students. I was happy to see. But I talked a little bit about just explaining the pelvic floor and what we look at as physiotherapists. And they all just kind of stared at me after, and they thought, oh my gosh, Melissa, like I would have just sent straight to a urologist or a gynecologist, and I just would have sent them home doing Kegels. That's what I kind of had in my head, that's what I thought you did. And I think it was excellent. They all were very appreciative of the information. I thought it's too bad that it's not yet in the curriculum itself. I think we'll see that eventually one day, but I think that you point out not only, like you said, are you trying to target the healthcare providers, but the patients themselves. And I wonder, I can imagine that your last couple of years have been extremely busy, just, you know, one door's opening after another. And I'm curious to know what you've seen so far, maybe in your community or maybe online through your platform, what changes are you seeing?
Well, I think we've had a lot of positive feedback from the people who I call them patients. Some people call them clients, pregnant and postpartum people who follow us around kind of just getting the information, huge part around vaccination, right? There's been hundreds of people who've probably chosen to be vaccinated because of the information that we've presented. It's not our information. We're just getting it out there, and they and our followers trust us as reliable, evidence-based people who are not going to send them astray if at all possible. And so that's one example. Another example is a lot of the nurses at our hospital follow us as well. And if you think medical school is bad, I think nursing is perhaps on par with that in terms of just keeping going with the same education over and over and over again and not really looking and deep diving into the evidence. And so I think there's been a big culture change around that as well. And then the third thing is actually like patients. I've had patients come on and say, hey, I listened to that pelvic floor recovery issue and I'm really struggling. And then I have a look and they've got some issues with their pelvic floor that I can actually help or refer them off. And so people who wouldn't have said anything before because it's a private issue, right, or because they're too shy will actually kind of come and talk to us, which is the entire reason we do this, because I think the pelvis and the pelvic floor and the vagina and the rectum and all of that goes along. People are really shy about that and they don't want to talk, but they suffer in silence for years and years and years. And so that has been the biggest impact, is when those people come in and say, hey, I listened to this podcast you guys did and I'm suffering. Can you help me? Amazing.
Absolutely. I think that this is a topic where social media and podcasts come in handy because it lets them get their feet wet, right? And then and kind of articulate their questions. Maybe they didn't even know how to ask you or what to ask you. And I know your appointment times are short. You don't have a lot of time. So at least they can come thinking like, okay, this is on my radar. I need to ask my doctor about this. Would you say then, I guess you've probably already answered this question. I'm wondering how it's changed your practice. I mean, I'm thinking by the way that you're talking that it opens your mind to different options out there. And would you say then you're able to, you feel more comfortable presenting different options to your patients, or you just send them different resources? I'm curious to know maybe like, how are the interactions with your patients different?
Yeah. So I think I've become much more open-minded for, modality, patient choice, just understanding that it is my job to present the evidence, to answer your questions, to understand your point of view, but it's your job as a patient to make the right choice that you believe for you. Now, that can be very challenging at some points. Take example, COVID and choosing not to get vaccinated. And it's from a fear of the vaccine, despite all the evidence. So there's only so much we can do as kind of science-based people. We can present the data, but there's always that kind of the person's inner voice, right? And so that can be a bit challenging for sure. But you know what? I am there to support my patients in whatever way they need it to the best of my ability. And all I can do is present them with the information, and it's their decision. And I think I've become much more open-minded to that. For the most part, and also recognizing that I don't have all the answers and it's okay to ask for help. And it's okay to ask my physio colleagues for help or my dietitian colleagues for help or my social work colleagues for help. And that's okay. And that's good.
I'm curious to know then, I actually have had a couple, new specialists come to Kelowna that luckily we've developed a relationship where I feel comfortable sending her an email every once in a while just saying, what should I do about this? Should I refer to you? Or who should I refer to? I can't say I've had that comfort before with physicians in town. I feel like I know them quite well. I respect them. I feel like they respect me, but I don't feel like there's that open communication. And I would say I value that so much because I think it also saves me referring sometimes, or maybe saves them referring. Have you found that, or is it, I also understand that's time consuming sometimes, but I'm thinking with one of the care providers, maybe we send a message once every 3 weeks. So it's not like it's happening every day. Are you finding that your communication with care providers is happening more or too difficult?
Well, I think that's the issue with social media, is it's so widespread. So I don't actually, we don't have a lot of connections with people in Victoria who we're sharing patients or clients with. Right. So I think it's a little bit different, but I do think it's important to, if you're really concerned about something, to reach out and to ask the fellow care provider, whoever that is, how they would like to be reached out to. So if I have a question for you, do you want me to pick up the phone and call you? Or mm-hmm. is it better to send you an email? Or is it better to, you know, book an appointment with you? Like, how do you want to have that conversation? Because I know in my day-to-day practice, it's crazy busy. I'm fully booked with 2 hours of paperwork at home afterwards. And so getting a phone call in the middle of the day is super disruptive. It's not that I don't want to talk to my provider, colleague, whoever that is. It's just that then my whole afternoon is off the rails. And so if somebody booked an appointment with me, then I could have that 10-minute conversation. We both know when it's going to be and we both get what we need out of it. And so I think part of it is just figuring out how that communication can happen, because it's really important to happen.
Awesome. I think that's great. What about how can then, if we think about where this could go, I guess I'm thinking, first of all, what kinds of take-home messages can anyone listening use thus far? So I guess, you know, how do we create change? Because I think you've mentioned some of the barriers, one of them being that our healthcare system doesn't provide for, you know, seeing a lot of the allied health practitioners. So I think, like you said, that's one of the barriers, is that I need to be able to send to someone that has the information, but people can't always afford to pay for this. How are we going to see change? And at this point, is it just awareness and people then have the education to be able to reach out as they see fit? Or how do we move forward?
I mean, I think there's a few options for that. One, I mean, primary care in our community in BC, in Canada, really is not very well supported from the government, both from a logistical point of view, but also from a financial point of view. And so we can, you know, we can reach out to our MLAs, we can write letters, we can say we need better primary care, and we need more holistic care. So we need the system to change so that we can actually access the people we need to access to a certain extent. We're doing a little bit of that work at Grow right now, trying to figure out how over the next 3 years, we're going to create this kind of clinic that's going to be able to provide that, meet the needs of our community and meet the needs of our practitioner and provide that kind of whole person care, which is what family practice should be doing, right? And I think another thing, so again, it's a lot of it, that's a long-term plan, short-term plan. I think having things like your course accessible, right? So you've got a course that does a lot of the work that you would normally do in your one-to-one session, but overall it's a fraction of the cost. So how can we support people who are interested in doing that type of work to do that? Or how can we say to patients, you know what, you can't afford 12 physio sessions, but maybe this course would get you kind of almost where you need to do. And then you can just do one or two physio sessions to make sure you're doing your pelvic strengthening exercises properly, right? Mm-hmm. Something like that. I don't know what the answer is. I don't know how to fund that. I don't know any of that, but I think there's creative ways that we can do things that are a little bit different. Putting on online webinars mm-hmm. to a big group of people at the same time, right? Mm-hmm. And I think there's a lot of ways to do it. I think the problem is we are all just so busy trying to get our day-to-day lives done, and we don't have the capacity or the space in our lives to think creatively and to do these things that are kind of over and above, which could provide huge benefits to both us as providers, but mostly to our patients and clients, because we're not supported in a way to do that.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I'm curious to know then, there'll be a lot of care providers listening to this, but also a lot of our clients or patients. And I wonder if, so you've talked about how you're feeling more open-minded. You feel like you can provide a lot more information to your patients now. What if that patient that's listening doesn't have you as a care provider? What kinds of things would you suggest to them when going to talk to their care provider? How should they ask questions, or how should they maybe approach some of these topics with their care provider? Any suggestions?
So I think just being open and calm and curious is a really good start. So, and really getting to straight to the nuts and bolts of what your concerns are and being honest about that. So say you have pelvic pain after delivery. You know what? It really hurts when I have intercourse. Are there any reasons why that might be? And if they say, oh, that's normal, like, okay, well, fair enough. That doesn't seem normal to me. Is there anybody else that you might suggest that I reach out to, like a pelvic physio or, you know, whatever? And I think just kind of being calm and curious is a really good way of going through life, and just assuming people are doing the best that they can, but they may not have all of the information or the knowledge that's out there. Nobody can. And so, you know, if you are struggling and you don't get the results you want, then go in again. Because oftentimes I have patients who come in with a concern and we say, okay, well, let's try X, Y, and Z. And in my brain, maybe I haven't said it out loud, I said, and if then things aren't getting better, come back and see me in 8 to 12 weeks, 6 weeks, whatever it is. If they don't come back in, I assume it's better. Mm-hmm. So you need to come back in if it's not getting better. So if your doctor says, you know what, it's probably normal, let's give it a little bit of time. That means if it's not better in a month or two, come back in. They're mm-hmm. not saying there's nothing wrong with you. They're just saying perhaps a little bit of time will make it better, which it very well could. And if it doesn't, let's reassess and then make a new plan. So I think as patients, we often don't hear that. It's it's intended from the physician's point of view or from the care provider's point of view. It's not necessarily explicitly said. So if something's continuing to bother you, you go back in and you ask again. And that would be my biggest piece of advice from a care provider point of view.
I think it's also important too that we all are our own advocates, our own educated advocates. And so I think that just like you're putting out content that you said, evidence-based, same with the content that I put out. I think that you have to find, you know, sources that you trust and are evidence-based so that you can take in that information, but then advocate for yourself. I think you can never assume someone else knows as much about you as you do about yourself. And so I think that's a big take home that I think is important for people to hear is that you do need to, you know, educate yourself, but find the right avenues until you feel supported or until you find the help that you need. And I think, isn't it 17 years? They say it takes 17 years for evidence to make it to clinical practice. And I think that we're just really in the middle of hearing so much about more that we can do for pregnant and postpartum women. And there's a lot of evidence actually to support that. It's just starting to make its way. And you even said a couple of years ago, you might not have been ready for all of this, right? Like something changed in your life too, that you were ready to start synthesizing all of the evidence that was there and start to change your practice. It's so hard for practitioners, I think, to change our practice, right? Because there's almost something about that, that you're like, oh my gosh, I've been telling people inaccurate information and that feels uncomfortable, right? Yeah. I feel like almost every day I learn something that I'm like, oh my gosh, that's not accurate. I've been telling someone that. I thought it was accurate, but I've actually learned it's not. But I think it takes a lot to like just admit that I'm constantly learning too, right? And I think we are all as practitioners constantly learning too.
Yeah. And I think we as providers need to get better at taking feedback as the gift that it is, because it is a huge gift. It has to be presented in a kind and compassionate way, but we also need to be able to take feedback in a good way. We have an online prenatal course and we're actually going to be re-recording it tomorrow because, you know, we've had some feedback that we have what we think people need in it, but it's not necessarily all of what they want in it. And so we've kind of done a bit of a deep dive into the evidence of kind of what do people want out of a prenatal course? What do they need when they're looking back at from 4 weeks postpartum? What's prevented birth trauma, psychological, physical, that we need to have in it. But when they're looking forward at 36 weeks, what do they want to know? And so now we're incorporating more of both of those pieces into that, that course that we have, because we think it's really important to listen to the people who we're trying to serve. But also sometimes we do have a sense of, you know, the really actual important things from a different perspective. And so understanding each other's perspectives, I think, is a really important piece of the puzzle as well.
Awesome. So on that note, can you just tie it off with, you've mentioned that you have a podcast, you've mentioned that you have this course. What else is to come? What else do you have to offer the people that are listening? And what else is to come if there's anything you're ready to share?
Well, right before we got on, I was like, oh my gosh, my brain is going crazy. Cause we have all kinds of plans, both in our She Found Motherhood world, but also in my like clinical world, all kinds of hopes and dreams and aspirations. So a couple of the things that we have, well, we haven't announced it yet, but we have a really exciting, project we're working on that we're going to be announcing in the next couple of weeks, for people getting close to delivery and postpartum. And then Sarah and I are also working on securing some funding for a Pregnancy for Professionals podcast. So a way to help spread all this information and information from colleagues like you about kind of what we all as professionals need to know in terms of supporting pregnant people and postpartum people more effectively. So that's kind of coming down the line. And I feel like there's some more stuff, but it's all a blank to me. But yeah, so we've got our podcast, we've got our Instagram, we've got our website, we've got our online prenatal course and a newborn sleep course. And we've got a postpartum community that we kind of have expert guests once a month talking about kind of topics that are really important to that preparing for postpartum and postpartum piece. So that's the nesting community that we've got as well. So it's all lots of exciting stuff. And I am running out of time to get it all done, I feel like.
Honestly, I can't thank you enough, both you and Sarah, for not only your openness to like your journey, your learning journey as a professional, but also, you know, on behalf of like other physicians out there, you know, you're kind of challenging, I think, other physicians to be like, you guys, we've got to keep up with what our patients need and want. And I also thank you, like on behalf of so many patients, because I can just feel the sigh, or it kind of like, oh, she hears us. And so I appreciate everything that you're doing for so many different listeners out there. So yeah,
well, thank you. I appreciate you and all that you've brought to my life in terms of expanding my knowledge base. So it's mutually beneficial.
And that's a wrap. If you enjoyed this show, would you pretty please, with a cherry on top, review, rate, and share this podcast, as it helps with gaining exposure. For more information on how to work with me, visit my website, mommyberries.com. I'll see you next time.